Welcome to Failing Up, a podcast where we explore failure.
Why we're afraid of it, why we try to avoid it, and the success that can arise directly from it.
Failure comes in many shapes and forms. It can even mean different things to different people.
This show, Failing Up, intends to explore all aspects. These are the stories of people who have experienced profound failures that ultimately led them to something positive.
We hope this helps us all learn and grow. Thanks for listening.
My name is Eden.
And I'm Guy.
Welcome.
So welcome to Failing Up. Eden, it's been a while since we've done a show.
Let's not acknowledge that.
Oh, we shouldn't tell people?
Yeah.
I think we should explain to the audience that, you know, the holidays come and everybody says no to being on your podcast, essentially. Anybody you want, anyway.
Andy.
Well, Andy Lassner did recently turn us down for a second appearance. He said maybe this summer.
He's not going to listen to this, so I don't care. We can talk about it.
but other people, obviously, we've been trying to nail down on the show, and we
keep failing, guys.
Yeah, but that's okay.
Part of the game.
That is part of the game. That's part of failing up, because eventually we will have them on the show,
and we
will triumph.
We've succeeded today. We have someone.
We do. And I should welcome our guest. His name is Brandon Koch. Right? Do I have your last name right?
No, you have it wrong.
Oh, what is your last name?
Brandon Koch.
Oh, it's Koch.
Yeah.
Oh, like the Koch brothers.
So let me say it again. Let's welcome Brandon Koch. It's spelled Koch, but it's...
It's like the Koch brothers, no?
Yes, the rich dudes.
Are you the rich dudes?
No.
It's like, you got the rich dudes and one person in my house?
No, unfortunately, Brandon is not one of the billionaires, but thank you for being here. We really appreciate it. I do know Brandon through a friend and thought his story was very interesting. And so let's just get into it. So, Brandon, you had a fairly normal childhood, I assume, like the rest of us?
No, not at all.
Oh, you didn't? No, but like, so when you're growing up, when you're, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, you don't feel like a normal kid running around?
No.
Why is that?
I was very sensitive, actually, and I grew up in a rural area of Pennsylvania. People are out hunting and doing all that kind of stuff, and I was just kind of like isolated. I didn't really feel like I fit in there. I feel things a lot differently than most people, at least there, do.
At the time, I assume when you're a kid, you just don't understand why you're feeling different?
Oh, no, I didn't understand until years later.
And you said, where you grew up in Pennsylvania, these guys were hunters and like, how do you want to describe them? Like kind of rednecky on the side of redneck?
Yeah.
Yeah, because certain parts of Pennsylvania are more cultured and then other sides are a little more rural, right? It's a huge state, which a lot of people don't realize. And so then at what point in your life do you have a realization like, here's one of the reasons why I feel different?
When I was living in Europe, actually, I met a woman and she kind of explained to me that certain people are more sensitive than others and it's actually a part of your genes. I read a book about it and then I just kept learning more and more.
When you're like 13 or 14 years old, you come out to your mom that you're gay.
Yeah.
So obviously you knew this beforehand. At what point do you realize, hey, I'm gay and these guys, you know, most people just assume people are straight kind of thing, especially where you live, right? Mm-hmm. What point in your life do you realize that?
I realized that when I was like 5, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so, and then it took you all the way till 14, right, to feel comfortable enough to say something.
Actually, no. My mom went through my phone and everything.
So. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
You didn't tell her. She went through your phone.
Right, yeah.
And then she confronts you?
Yeah, did she plan on? Like, were you planning on telling her ever? Or?
I was. Probably. Yeah, probably once I had freedom to move about as much as I wanted to.
Right.
Like I had a car, I could leave, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
So if you knew you when you were 5, did you know anybody that was gay when you were 5?
My oldest brother was, but I wasn't really close to him at all. Other than that, not really. Yeah.
So now you're 14, your mom looks through your phone. Wow, you're younger than I even thought you were because, you know, I think when I was 14, my mom had to look through my beeper. You know, that's how old I am.
Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. If I even had a beeper. I did at 14.
Point. I didn't even think about
so that. So your mom looks at your phone. She finds whatever she finds. And then she confronts you. Mm-hmm. Is that scary?
Yeah.
And
it was before I came home from school, actually. I had an audition that day.
Yeah.
And I called home because I forgot my phone. And she was like, oh, and you're not going to your friend's this weekend. I know he's not just your friend.
Wow.
Oh.
And then you have to come clean or do you deny it? How do you react to that?
Oh, she's very kind of stern. So there was no denying it.
Yeah.
It didn't matter if I did or not. Yeah. So it was just a matter of what is going to happen when I get home.
Right.
So what happened when you got home?
I pretty much got the cold shoulder. And I don't want the show to be anything about bashing my mom or anything, because we have come out of this on a beautiful side and I love her very much. And it was just, she didn't understand it at the time.
Yeah.
So I got home. She pretty much gave me the cold shoulder. And then ever since then, we just really didn't get along. Hmm. I ended up moving out and moving in with my dad eventually. And we didn't talk for a few years. And then I started talking to her again, and we kind of started to rekindle our relationship after about 2.5 years.
Wow.
Wow.
2 years you didn't talk to your mom. And that had to be tough on you personally too, I assume.
Yeah, because within those 2 years, I found out that I was adopted.
Oh, wow.
Oh, God.
So how does that happen? How do you find out you're adopted?
I actually attempted suicide. I ended up in a mental institution, and in that mental institution, my cousin was there that I didn't know. And she just kind of came up to me one day and told me,
hey, she said, hey, I'm your cousin and you're adopted?
Yeah.
This is like a Maury show.
And you're also in kind of a mental institution, yeah. As you said. So don't you go, nah, this girl is cuckoo, you know?
I didn't know what to believe at the time.
Like, yeah, that's another
thing. I was kind of removed from reality, like in the sense of not really feeling like I was supposed to be where I was. Not really feeling like good on the earth, period, because me being very intuitive, I always have been, but I didn't know what that meant. So I always just kind of felt like I was walking around in this floppy body and I didn't know what to do with it. So I've always been kind of removed from the world. And so when she told me that, I was just kind of like, okay, like I'm just going to believe whatever I'm being told. I'm not really sure where to go with this or where not to go with this. I'll talk to my dad about it, but I already felt kind of torn up, like, as it was. So
yeah. I mean, you're already in a very deep emotional, I mean, probably a very tender kind of state, and then somebody comes up and says, oh, and by the way, your mom is not your mom and your dad is not your dad. Mm-hmm. I mean, that has to be just... So my dad actually found out when he was around 70 years old that his real mom was not his mom, was his stepmom, and he found out he had a different name. So that wow. kind of, I mean, that I'm sh- so I kind in that respect, that's why where I'm relating, where I'm like, wow, I know my dad at, even at 70 years old, he was like, should I change my name? Because I was like, no, you've been going by this name the whole time. He was going to change his name to Nathan because that's what his real name is. He didn't ever realize that he has a biblical name. But yeah, so I know that screwed with him just a little bit. And so even as a younger person, that has to mess with your head. And you're already in this fragile state. So what happens to you from there? You say, okay, I'm adopted. And now do you go talk to your dad?
Yeah, they actually brought my dad in because it was a huge kind of revelation. And we all had a conversation about it, me and my counselor and my dad. And it was actually really emotional. I feel like he's always been wanting to tell me. And he always wanted me to know, but he also felt like maybe I would think of him differently. Maybe I wouldn't love him like he was my dad.
Yeah.
Which is not true at all, even now. But I just kind of felt very betrayed in a sense. And I felt like I would have understood. I don't know. I don't understand why. It would have just explained a lot.
Were there any telltale signs in hindsight? So, and again, I'm thinking to my dad where he went, huh, I remember when he found out, he goes, I remember my mom, she made like comments when I was a kid, like, you're not even mine, or like just like hinted at certain things that in hindsight he was like, holy shit, she was kind of telling me all along that I was adopted. Was there anything like that for you?
There was. I didn't see a lot of pictures of when I was a baby. I didn't see any pictures of my mom when she was pregnant with me. And then also there were these awkward moments, like at certain times where I would say something or they would say something, and there would just be an awkward silence because they didn't know how to respond or how to continue with whatever they were saying.
Yeah.
Because they almost said it or I almost like asked the question, you know. And I look a lot different from my family, but not at the same time. I mean, I'm told that I'm half black, but I'm very light.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually have the same color eyes as my dad, the same hair as my family. But other than that, I have a lot of other features that don't match. So I kind of just assumed, well, maybe I just do look different. I don't know. So, I mean, I feel like I have always known, but it was kind of like, let me just lie to myself so I don't even have to go there.
Yeah. Is there any relief in knowing you're adopted? Like going, oh that's why I'm not a redneck. That's why I don't want to go shoot a deer or, you know.
That I think that stuff is genetic necessarily. Shooting deer.
No, that's true. It's not genetic.
There was. It explained a bit in the sense of, okay, maybe that's why I don't kind of relate to the same things as them, or how I just don't understand things in the way that they do. I'm a bit more perceptive in a way. I just feel like the rest of my family kind of have these connections that I don't have.
And then how old are you when you're a teenager? You're working at McDonald's? I worked at McDonald's myself at 14 years old.
You guys could just exchange secret codes.
Again, you know, this is going to show my age. I did chicken, they called it chicken pie filet, which meant McChickens, filet of fish, and apple pies. They didn't trust me for the most part until like my second month, and I quit after my second month. They didn't trust me with the register. They definitely didn't trust me with drive through because all my friends did drive through. I didn't get drive through. I got chicken pie filet.
Considering what guy does now, I'm surprised they didn't give you the register.
Think I could do anyway? I think I was perfectly capable of the drive through. I was not apparently, but Brandon, you were in the drive through in McDonald's, and you have a story about something that happened very specifically there, right?
Yes. So I found out I was adopted when I was 15. I was working at McDonald's when I was 16, and yes, I was in the drive-thru, and one day this woman comes up, and I hand her her food, and she said, oh, hi, Brandon, and I'm like,
whoa!
I'm like,
am I being punked?
Okay, you were looking at my name tag, okay, maybe that's why. And then she's like, do you know who I am? And she has, like, big sunglasses on, so I don't even see her face. I'm like, I don't think so. And she said, oh, well, I'm your mother.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
And apparently she knew I was working there because she knew some of my coworkers. Mm-hmm. I found out later. But my response kind of was, oh, okay, I'll be right back.
That'd be 6:39, please.
Not like,
you want ketchup?
Would you like ketchup? I was going to say.
So what did you do? You said you'll be right back. Did you go and like freak out? What'd you do?
I told my manager I needed to take a couple seconds, and I never really came back.
Wow.
Yeah, and I kind of just blacked out after that. I don't remember the rest of my shift.
Wow.
I know she didn't stay there or anything,
yeah.
But I don't remember what even my thoughts were after it. It was kind of just like too much for me to handle at the time.
And that was the first time you met your mother?
The first time.
And it was also the last time?
Yes.
You still have not met, you haven't had any contact with her since then?
I have had contact. Well, apparently, I haven't seen pictures or heard stories or anything, but apparently she was in my life until I was 4 or 5, until there was an argument and something happened. Mm-hmm. So apparently she was in my life at one point. And then after the drive-thru situation, I didn't speak with her for probably about a year. She added me on Facebook, and then I started speaking with her, and I just didn't really get a good feeling about it. So I was like, maybe this will be another time. I'm not ready for that right now.
So then what age do you actually go and move to San Francisco?
You mean to LA?
Did you not move to San Francisco?
I did not move to San Francisco.
Where did you get that information?
I don't know. Maybe I was, okay. Let's try that again. So at what point do you move to, you did, okay. So you moved to LA. At what age?
I moved to LA at 19.
And you start partying.
Yes.
And drinking.
Yes.
And other things.
Yes.
And you get really into the party lifestyle. So one thing I should mention is a lot of the things I know about Brandon is he did a documentary, which we'll talk about later. So a lot of the information is that's where I get it from. And so I'm questioning that, Eden. And so maybe I don't know how I got San Francisco.
Why did you originally decide to move to LA, though?
For music and dance,
okay.
Actually.
That's a good reason.
Yeah, it was just me and my dog. We drove over here.
Wow, from Pennsylvania?
Yes.
Shit.
And
your car must get great gas mileage.
It did not.
No.
No.
So you drive across country with your dog. You move to LA thinking that you want to be a dancer. Mm-hmm. A professional. And did you always, was that something you always wanted to do?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wanted to be a magician when I was five.
I mean, I was named after 90210, so I think I was destined.
Oh!
I did not know
my
that.
My secret name is Donna.
That's my mom's name.
Oh, no!
Makes it kind of weird. So, you moved to LA, you bring your dog, and then you lost your dog.
Yes.
What's that? What does that mean exactly? Because you said I lost my dog, and I'm like, does that mean he passed away?
Or he passed away.
Yeah. Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you physically lost it. I'm like, didn't he go looking for it? Or
no.
Okay, so that's horrible. And then, so then things had to have been that could not have helped how you were feeling.
Right. Well, I didn't start partying like crazy until after that happened, which was about 3 months into me living in LA. So that was kind of, well, I got here wanting to be a dancer. Figured out that the industry really isn't for me in the sense, well, the music industry mostly,
yeah.
But it's all kind of wrapped into one. So I didn't know what I was going to do. Plus I had fibromyalgia, which is a pain condition that affected my entire body. After she passed, it got worse and worse and worse. The more I drank, the worse.
Yeah, I know that there's like triggers for it that
yes,
like
yeah.
certain things could definitely make it flare up.
Fibromyalgia could be like debilitating, right? I mean, like you could like literally not leave your house because of the pain you're going
and,
through.
And then like combined with the depression and anxiety.
Oh God, yeah. This is a bad cocktail.
Right.
Yeah.
So you couldn't work, you couldn't dance.
Right.
And you're partying, basically. But you're partying 6 days a week, you said.
Mm-hmm.
Mondays?
Which Tuesdays off from partying? Is this like
Mondays?
Mondays. Why Mondays?
Netflix and chill?
Nobody parties on Mondays.
That is true though.
Yeah.
You're so right. Not that like I'm a partier and I know this at all. But like it is a pretty quiet day.
Yeah.
They're just pooped out from partying 6 days a week.
Yeah, and then like going back to work.
Yeah.
Right.
So Monday is almost like the partier's weekend. You would look forward to it, be like, oh, I can't wait till Sunday night. I can just finally rest. And what are you doing? You're doing like coke and ecstasy, like heavy stuff, obviously. And then you met a man named Derek.
I did.
How did you meet Derek?
Well, I want to get into kind of the spiritual side of this. After she passed and after I was deep into everything and kind of isolating myself from my family even, I kind of said, God, if there is a God, like something needs to happen in my life now to show me that there's something to believe in. Because I didn't grow up with a religion. I didn't grow up with any type of beliefs, but I wanted to believe in something to help me realize what my life is about, what my purpose is.
You needed some kind of faith.
Yeah, and some kind of guidance. Yeah. And so that's when Derek came along, and Derek was psychic. He gave me lots of readings, and he was my boyfriend. So that was the beginning of me kind of opening up to, okay, there is something more than this physical stuff around me, and there is something more to my dog's death than I thought, which ended up being, it was kind of like my wake-up call. It was kind of like me waking up to everything that was around me and all of my abilities and gifts and senses. And it was the beginning of my spiritual awakening, actually.
Was it? So, I mean, it sounds like almost like that was your rock bottom in a sense.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird because most people are like, oh, I was in a toilet shooting up heroin. For you, it was your dog dying. You know, that was the wake up call. It's super interesting, I think. But also you claim that Derek helped you heal your
fibromyalgia.
Thank you. That's why you're here. Yes, fibromyalgia. But is that correct? How does that happen? And when do you realize, wait a second, he's healing my disease.
Fibromyalgia. I'm just going to point to you every time.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, he always said, well, when he was around, my fibromyalgia pain was actually worse. But when he left, he would explain to me that he kind of took it with him so that he could release it and then come back and take more. And I didn't think about that until right now. But he introduced me to this place called, well, it's a healer called John of God. He's in Brazil. He's probably the most famous healer in the world. Oprah's done shows on him, and he does these channeled healings, whether it be physical or non-physical. Like he'll take a scalpel and just cut you. But he also performs long-distance healings because you don't need to be in the room to be healed by someone. So there is a medium that is one of his mediums that sent me energy. I had to lay in bed for 24 hours. Wow. Which I never thought that I could do because I couldn't slow down for a second, let alone 24 hours. But
wait,
I was,
literal, like you can't go up to get up to pee or anything?
I could go to pee and I could eat, but Derek had to bring me something. And
Wow.
Yeah. So I couldn't like go make something or actually use my energy on anything. My energy was all supposed to be used on the healing and of the receiving of the energy. And I still, it took me 2 months to even agree to it. And I still wasn't sure if I believed in it or not, but that was the first day that I felt energy, the first day that I felt something other than what was actually being shown to me. And I was so tired, the most tired I've ever been for 24 hours straight.
Did he convince you to do it, or was it just like you were like broke down, like, why am I not doing it?
Or like, I've had enough of this fibromyalgia, I want to get rid of it.
I did my own research on the law of attraction. I watched The Secret, and I started to do some research about healing and stuff like that. So once I saw like evidence of other people having success stories, then I was convinced. So he didn't try to convince me. He was like, this is something that I know of and it would really help you. And then I decided to go to it after I made my decision, you know.
Gotcha.
So after this 24-hour period where you're receiving this energy and all that, do you just wake up healed?
No, it's a process. So it was kind of like, it's kind of like when you get surgery, you have the surgery and then you have a kind of like a recovery time. And then sometimes you have to get your stitches taken out or whatever.
Right.
So you have the healing, and then for the next, I think 30 days, you can't have sex. For the next 3 months, you can't have pork.
Why pork?
You try not to have red meat because it takes a lot of energy to
to digest it.
That.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Nothing spicy. No alcohol, of course. No drugs, of course. Mm-hmm. And so you have to use all of your energy just for your healing. So that's...
So it's kind of like having surgery. You have to take it easy.
And then the next week, you actually have to sleep again for 16 hours. And
I could do that.
Kind of like the removal of your stitches. And then...
Right.
You are sent herbs that are specifically blessed for you with a certain energy that's supposed to help with what you're healing. And then I took that for 3 months, and I could feel things occurring in my body, but it was more so me waking up to what I need to do with my mind, because you can go get surgery, you can do whatever you want, but until you do something with the mind, it's going to keep recreating it.
That's true.
Yeah. So, I feel like it kind of unraveled my stubbornness in opening up to new things. Yeah.
Interesting. And during this time where you kind of have to take it easy, what were you doing? Because you weren't partying. So what were you filling all this empty space with?
Learning, mostly. And then I started working more and kind of exploring my passions and watching shows and stuff that kind of propelled me or motivated me and gave me inspiration. Mm-hmm. And then I had to prepare because we were moving to Europe. So we moved to Europe, and that kind of gave me the space, because LA is very congested, as you know, and you don't really have your own space to think. You're always thinking about, okay, how am I going to look today when I go out there, you know?
Yeah, somewhat.
But I moved to Denmark, and they call Denmark the happiest country in the world. And I can say that it feels like it.
Really?
Because people really don't care what you're doing. They take care of their own business, and that's what they're there for. And they mind their own business, and that gave me the space to kind of be like, okay, what's going on here? I started reading a lot of books and learning about the mind, learning about the body and how things happen in the body because of the mind, and started doing affirmations, different healing techniques on myself. And it kind of really started to infuse into my life and bring physical evidence. And that's when I met the woman that kind of told me everything that I needed to know. It was at a dance audition. Her daughter was auditioning. Mm-hmm. And we both walked up to each other and said, I feel like I need to talk to you.
Huh.
Yeah. We looked like we were related, too.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And she told me there's people that are highly sensitive and they have certain genes that make them that way, and it's not an accident. It's how you are, and you just have to learn how to deal with it. There's actual a science to it. There's a book about it, and she talks about all the science to it and everything.
And when you say sensitive, you don't mean like you cry at weddings. You mean sensitive to like the energy of the earth, essentially, or the energy of people and energy in general.
When I walk into a room, I notice everything about it. I notice what's on the walls. I notice how the lighting is, if it's different from the last time I was there. I can smell scents really, really, really strongly. I notice people by their scents and by the way that they feel rather than how they look and what their names are.
Hmm.
And I just always thought everybody did this.
Right.
Yeah. And so I'm sensitive to what is going on around me.
Can you spot another sensitive now?
Yes.
So you can like walk into a room and go, Oh, yeah. I'm going to go talk to that person and see if they know that they're... Have you enlightened people?
Oh, yes.
You have?
Yeah.
Gone, you're sensitive, and are you ever wrong?
No.
That's super interesting.
Super confident.
It's very... It's we share kind of the same mannerisms in how we go about the world. And there's highly sensitive personality, and then there's empath, which is kind of the next step. So every empath is highly sensitive, but not every highly sensitive is an empath. So empath, coming from the word empathy, that's when you can literally feel the emotions of the other person. You can feel their heartbeat. You can feel their body. You can hear their thoughts sometimes or sense their thoughts. So that's when it's hard for you to know what is yours and what is theirs. Your boundaries are a little bit enmeshed.
The other thing I was thinking, it sounds like skepticism at first with the healing and the, you know, at some point, like, do you remember when you're like, whoa, this is really working? Or was it just like, it just slowly, it worked and it was just, it was what it was, you know?
For the first couple of months, it was kind of like, I'm just going to be open to it and go about my life as much as I can without restricting myself from doing what I used to do, as in partying and denying that what I'm going through is tough, you know. But being in Denmark, that's when I realized that there is a difference between just blocking myself off from what might be there and then actually knowing that it is. And I really got to understand it. I felt like, so when we talk about people that are spiritual and people that are meditating, we might say we get downloads where one moment we don't know something and another moment we do. I felt like that was kind of happening with me when I was sleeping or when I was just taking a second to kind of meditate. I wasn't really meditating back then, but I felt like one moment I didn't know anything about the mind, and the next moment like I could just... I felt like I was already a hypnotherapist, which I'm sure we're going to talk about.
Yes.
I was telling people all about the mind and how it works and how the subconscious works, and I didn't know where it came from. So it was kind of like, as soon as I opened up to it, the information came, and it was all innate. It wasn't,
right.
I was reading books, but it wasn't really about the details.
You plugged in the USB.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like downloading.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
So you obviously moved back to the United States. You had visa issues. Is that what it was?
Yeah, visa issues and... relationship issues.
Okay. So, yeah. But do you, okay. So, but also I assume you look at that as like, well, that's the right thing, right? That's where life is taking me.
It definitely felt right, because when I lived in LA before, like I was kind of like wandering around like a lost puppy, not knowing where to go or what to do.
Yeah.
But whatever I was doing was working there, and I felt like I was strong and confident enough to come back and say, okay, like, I know what to do. I know kind of what my purpose is. I know it's in a sense helping people, but I'm not sure. I'm just excited to find out. You know?
It sounds like Denmark's like bizarro LA, you know, and like you almost, they're the exact opposite of each other. And,
yeah.
And it's weird to see like, hey, you'd want to go back to.
Well, they are and they aren't. Like, I feel like Pennsylvania is more opposite
of LA.
You know, they're both pretty liberal.
Well.
And open-minded, somewhat.
But in the sense of competitiveness, yeah. And that type of energy.
An image, yeah.
Yeah.
Although I feel, as someone that's from LA, originally grew up and born, raised, everything, I feel that that is something that has been, that's not inherent. Like, I don't feel it in LA so much.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's brought by people that move here.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And
now I don't really feel it the same way. I mean... there's always going to be that little bit of a sense of it for me, because it's a collective thing that I can mm-hmm. feel. But other than that, like, if you aren't involving yourself in that way, then you're not going to feel it that way.
Yeah, and I feel also, because a lot of people come here with this dream, and they feel like, I need to, because I moved here, there's all this pressure, so I need to be this thing.
Yeah,
I'm not.
Exactly.
And if you're from here, you're like, well, I'm just here, so.
Yeah, I mean, you grow up with it, so you understand what not to do.
I'm not sure you grew up with it, but there's just like, there's no pressure to make it in anything, because we are from here, and we're just, going back home is just, going over the freeway. It's not like we're not here to achieve a dream necessarily. And we're not chasing anything. This image that we're not. Mm-hmm. That's all. But but it's good that you're back at least. And that you came in with like a different, and I guess I suppose a better view of it.
Mm-hmm. And that was January 2014, you came back. Mm-hmm. And then you found a church, right?
Yeah.
So you said you grew up without religion at all. How do you even like figure out what kind of church you or temple or whatever, like how do you figure out like if I didn't have a religion, I don't know that I'd go, oh, I want to be Jewish, or I want to be like it would, I think it would be very hard to figure out what you'd want to be.
Well, it's not really a religion, the church that I went to.
Okay.
One of the staple books that I read when I was in Denmark was You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay.
And I love her. I do a lot of her meditations.
Yes,
she's great.
I love her.
She has a very soothing voice. Guy, you should listen to it.
Okay.
And I think she's 90 now.
I know. I've been listening to her since I was a kid. That's how...
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, she wrote that book. I mean, I read that book and that completely changed my life. And she talks about how she started learning about everything that she knew, and it was through the Church of Religious Science. Now, it's not Scientology. It has nothing to do with Scientology.
Yeah.
It's the science of the mind. So I looked up a church, and I started going to one of those churches just because I trusted that she would do something that wasn't that was in line with something that I would want. So I started to go to that, and it's not really about preaching. It's really, you'd go there, you meditate at the beginning collectively, and then I wouldn't call him a pastor or a priest.
A shaman of some sort?
A reverend. I think that's what I think it's still a reverend, but he picks something, a topic, and kind of talks on that. I don't know if you know Marianne Williamson.
Yeah.
So she does talks every Monday.
Yeah, right over here, actually, at the Saban Theater.
Yeah, so it's pretty much like that. It's pretty much like a speech. Like,
it's a motivational speaker.
Yeah, pretty much. It's not like, this is what the Bible says, and this is
there's no God. Is there God, quote-unquote, involved, or no?
I think they either use the word source or the universe,
okay,
something like that, but they also explain, like, it doesn't really matter what word you use if you're thinking of a figure or not. It's just knowing that we all come from the same place, that we're all connected in that sense.
And you also used self-help books as well? Like, was that to help you figure out kind of your own self?
To see that other people have gone through a journey of a lot of challenges and came out on the other side, that was really important to me to relate to that, because I was attracting a lot of people that were going through the same thing as me, or the people that I could help that were going through worse things, but I wasn't really seeing the people that could motivate me and that said, like, I've been there, like, you can get past this.
And then how do you find hypnotherapy?
Groupon, actually.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
So you found a Groupon.
I felt like I used to live by the school of hypnotherapy in the Valley. And I always saw the sign. I always was like, okay, I need to check out hypnotherapy. I don't understand it. I need to check it out. And then even when I moved back here, like, I was going through Vegas or something, and there was a hypnotherapist there. I almost went to that one. Mm-hmm. Like, there was always these little things that came up. And, like, I was always really interested in it. At my prom, I actually was hypnotized. So, like, there was always these little things that came up that kind of pointed me in that direction, but I never took it until I finally, like, bought the Groupon.
And you bought a Groupon to be hypnotized, to go to a hypnotherapist. And then you realized, wow, I want to do this for a living?
I had 3 sessions, and what was left of my fibromyalgia was gone, and what was left of me being depressed or anxious was pretty much gone too. And the hypnotherapist asked me to be on a show with her. So I went on the show, which was at the school, and the energy of the school was kind of just telling me, like, this is where you're supposed to be. Whether it be you become a hypnotherapist or this is just for you, this is where you're supposed to be. So I started 2 weeks later.
Let's talk about some of the things you do with hypnotherapy and some of the misnomers. Like, I know I've talked to people about hypnotherapy before, and I know a lot of people, a couple things. First, people think of like a magician kind of guy, right? Mm-hmm. They think of hypnosis. And then the other thing you hear a lot, I'm sure I've said it at times in my life, is, oh, well, I'm not susceptible to hypnosis. Yeah. But in reality, everybody is susceptible to hypnosis. And I learned from you in a very interesting way. I don't know if you could do this without visual, but the ladder.
Yeah.
Or the steps, right? Steps, can you explain that?
I can explain that. So everyone goes into hypnosis every day. Anytime that you are completely absorbed into something, whether it be TV or reading a book or driving or a conversation or meditating, anything that completely absorbs your attention and you're not paying attention to anything else around
on
it.
On this phone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, your
the
phone.
Biggest hypnotizer
yes,
in our phones,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Marketing is hypnosis.
Right, like,
yeah.
Everything is pretty much hypnosis. Anything that can grab your attention and hold it is hypnotizing you. And so if you think about it like a staircase, the bottom would be asleep and the top would be awake. Any step in between is hypnosis. So there's technically people that are in hypnosis all the time.
And you know, that explanation, I obviously never told you this, but that helped me in a sense that, like, I think we've all been there where, like, you're sleeping on a friend's couch, or you're supposed to be sleeping on a friend's couch, but you're not sleeping. You're awake the whole time. And for me, that used to make me so angry because I'm like, oh man, I'm not getting my sleep. I want to sleep. I know there's 2 hours left. They're going to be up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to have to get up. I'm not getting any sleep. And I just worry myself to, but when I started thinking about it in that, like, it's a steps kind of thing, I would go, wait a second. You're laying down on a bed. You're not like running around and jumping around. If somebody asks you to get up right now, it's a labor. So you are somewhere on those steps. So mm-hmm. if you can just accept that you're on the steps, fine. You might not go all the way to the bottom of the steps, but you're on the steps. You're not at the top of the steps. You're somewhere in the middle of the steps. At least for me, it made me feel much better. Like, okay, so I am actually getting rest. My brain is, you know, doing what it's supposed to do when you get sleep. Like, that used to really, for some reason, bother me. Just,
yeah, that's a really interesting, that's an interesting way of looking at it. You've thought a lot about it.
Yeah, well, sleep is important to me. So, yeah, it bothered me a lot. And then, yeah, that visualization for me, I was like, huh. It happened a couple times since. I was like,
Guy,
oh,
did you
it's
use
okay.
hypnotism to help you quit smoking?
I did not. I used Chantix. It's a drug. But I think hypnotherapy would work as well. I mean, I assume that's something that you've done or have. What other things though do you
yeah,
do?
Yeah, like, what do people usually come to you with, like, oh, I need hypnotherapy with this problem that I'm having mm-hmm. or this or that?
Well, hypnosis can really be used for anything. You could even use it for medical procedures, but I specifically
Instead of anesthesia,
there's hypnoanesthesia. Yeah. Yeah.
Is that safe? Like,
it is
if you're like getting
just,
like
no,
open just, heart surgery.
No, open heart surgery, no.
Yeah. That's
but
what
like
I thought.
Getting something done with your teeth.
Yeah, that I understand.
Yeah.
Like, my dad would refuse small. To do anesthesia for some reason.
But I'm not the one to talk to about that because that's not really what I do. Most people come to me with, okay, I'm having this issue in my life and it's blocking me from getting to point B. Mm-hmm. So we need to remove this so that we can get to point B.
Nice.
And so a lot of it ends up being relationship or mm-hmm. self-love or making money. Anything that's blocking them or anything that they have a pattern with that they're trying to create a new pattern
the
with.
The mind is so powerful that it could totally block you from doing that stuff.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. And what we're really doing is changing the neural pathways of the mind.
That's cool.
It's kind of like if you think about the woods, there's a path, but that hasn't always been a path, most likely. There's probably used to be trees there, but somebody decided to clear it and they had to keep going down the path before it actually looked like a path and felt like a path. So what we do with hypnosis is we start making the new paths.
And how long have you been doing hypnosis now for clients?
Probably like a year and a half.
Is this something that, like, so if somebody's listening right now and they're like, wow, I think maybe this could help me. Is that something, like, could they contact you?
Yes.
Okay. How would somebody contact you if they were interested in getting hypnotherapy. Don't worry, I edit, so nobody will know that I said psychotherapy instead of hypnotherapy.
Oh no, that's all that matters.
Anybody could contact me on brandonmichaelk.com or Brandon Michael Koch on Facebook, and brandonmichaelk@gmail.com.
And now I know that even if you don't, because you're in LA, you're LA based, but even if you don't live in LA, you can do this over like the phone or Skype or
FaceTime, anything that you can make a connection with, we can do hypnosis.
And so who do you recommend? I mean, obviously people, like you said, you can help people who can quit smoking, but
who's like the optimal person that you think would benefit from this?
With me, when people want to be spiritually connected or get more into spirituality, that's a good client for me. Also, self-love, anxiety, depression, relationships, manifesting, abundance or money or anything really. And people that want to kind of reactivate their sense of wonder in life or have a correct usage of their imagination, because our mind learns in images. So what we do with hypnosis, we call it imagery. We bring images to the mind and we keep doing that over and over and over again until the mind starts to accept the images. Mm. Because even when you close your eyes, your mind doesn't know if your eyes are open or closed when you are imagining a visualization. So that's why it's really important to do that when you meditate, to visualize and to feel emotions, because that's how the mind learns.
I think a lot of people are afraid of that sometimes.
So meditation and I
think we should talk about that too, some of the misconceptions.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely want to talk about, go ahead, let's talk about some of the misconceptions.
So don't ever watch a movie and accept anything that it says about hypnosis.
Well, yeah, obvious. Don't believe everything you read either.
Exactly. Nobody can be hypnotized unless they are allowing it. Because
willing.
Hypnosis is actually self-hypnosis. Mm. If you're going to watch a TV show, if you're not interested in it, you're not going to be hypnotized by it. You're
right? Making a murder?
Yeah, boring, loves it. Okay, yeah.
I like keep that. Hearing about this. I need to see what that
you
is.
Need to
see,
you
it's
need
polarizing.
To see.
You either like it or you hate it. It's 10 hours
but
of documentary.
Very, like, it's
10
very,
hours.
It's very much into the mind type thing.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Maybe why he's not getting it.
I will
yeah,
check it
if
out.
You like those like ID channels, if you like that kind, you know.
You can't pronounce fibromyalgia.
I can't. I'm not even going to try it. More, as a matter of fact, I've embarrassed myself enough. But yeah, what are some of the other misconceptions?
So some of the others, people think that they don't hear anything that you say, and that you're just pulling information out of them and telling them to tell you all their deep dark secrets, which is not true. When you're in hypnosis, you hear everything that's going on, unless you trust the person enough to just allow yourself to drift. And I use the words that you are telling me, because you only learn in the way that you learn. So what you're telling me, the way that you are speaking, is the way I'm going to speak to you in hypnosis. And that's the only way that it's going to work. What else do people think? People think that it's mind control. If I tell you to go around and cluck like a chicken and you don't want to, it's not going to happen.
Right.
If I go tell you to rob a bank and you don't want to, it's not going to happen. So if you trust the person and they have integrity, then you're going to be in good hands. But there's pretty much nothing that could happen in hypnosis that things could go wrong, unless somebody tries to regress you in the sense of, so you're 5 years old, someone who was like molested when they were five, you're 5 years old, you're in your bedroom, what is happening?
Yeah, right. Bad images back in.
Because it takes them back to being five. Like in the, you're just like I said with the mind and images, if you tell your mind you're five, the mind is literally going to regress back to that age, and you're not going to have all the information that you've learned up to this point. So with my clients, I usually say, okay, so we're going to work on this situation, but you are here, you are your age, and you are going to parent yourself through this. And so you're going to see your childhood self, and we're going to work through it that way.
Yeah.
So it doesn't create false memories. So if you regress somebody, they might start to remember something, but it's actually something that's not even true. And that is actually something that's happened in the past. I can't remember what his name is, but it's the reason why hypnosis was outlawed for so long.
Huh.
Because he would take all these girls and convince them, not because he was knowing that he was doing this, I think. I don't have all the details, but he was saying, you're in your room. Who's there with you? Is it your dad? He was leading them into believing that all of them, 50 girls or something, their fathers raped them or something. So that's something that doesn't happen unless you regress them.
Gotcha. Yeah. How do you deal with skeptics? Or do you it doesn't matter. I have too many clients. I don't have to deal with skeptics. Or do you actually talk to them?
Well, It just kind of depends. There's different types of skeptics. There's people that don't believe in it at all.
Yeah.
And there's people that are skeptical, but they're open. So the people that don't believe in it at all, I'm like, if this didn't work for me, I wouldn't do it. So I'm pretty sure that you don't know a lot of people that go to work and it doesn't work and they keep going.
Yeah.
You
know?
So I don't really get into it with them. But the people that are open to it, I start asking them questions like, so have you ever had this happen to you? And what connection did you make with it? How can you describe that? Like, how does that make sense to you that the mind did something like that?
Right.
Because, well, I could even do an exercise with them. I could tell them to stand up and say, close your eyes and take a step forward. And now step back, close your eyes. Now you're on the top of a bridge that's like 10,000 feet above the ground and you're about to fall off. Take a step forward. Like, you can already feel the anxiety. I can feel
yeah.
it when I say that.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. And that's all in the mind. That has nothing to do with where you actually... You're not standing on top of a ridge right now, but you're feeling like you are.
I used to have these sort of moments when I was a kid, I think. It was weird where I kind of, like, caught myself. I don't know why. Like, when I was 5, I remember, like, closing my eyes and being, like, just, like, creating, like, oh, my God, this is where I am right now. And, like, all of a sudden a sense of awareness and, like, mm-hmm. building in my mind. I think it was to help me with my anxiety when I went to, like, school, because I had separation anxiety mm-hmm. with my parents. So I'd always be like, okay, well, my mom is over there and my dad's over there type thing. And it's interesting that, like, continues. Like, yeah, the mind is just so powerful.
Yeah, that's something that I do, too. I mean, because of me being an empath, like I talked about earlier, I have to, like, create a shield around myself. And it's just an imaginary shield, and I used to think the imagination was useless, but it really, truly helps. I've been around a lot of people that I wouldn't want to pick up their energy, and I put a shield around me, and I walk out, and I'm not exhausted like I used to be before.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Or
I wish more people had that power.
I'll be walking down the street, and I could sense that there's some people around that I need to be aware of, and I will... like kind of send a certain energy their way and what they'll that particular second they'll just walk away. They'll just walk somewhere else.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. And that's another thing that
he's
shows
like
us
a wizard.
That we're all
connected. Let me
ask
like
you this.
Harry Potter.
We were talking about skeptics and about you actually like that you are open to help people. But let's say I am kind of skeptical. I'm not sure. Like, what is the first session with you? Like, are you automatically like, boom, I'm putting you into hypnosis, or how does that work?
No. So we talk about you're wanting to work on, and we kind of like make a connection because I don't like to work with somebody who doesn't feel comfortable with me.
Okay.
And they're not going to go very deep into hypnosis anyways. I teach them about their minds. I teach them like different concepts about relationships or about the way that they we call it suggestibility. What are you suggestible to? And that's the people that say that they're not able to be hypnotized, it's the people that learn in a different way than you would think. So instead of saying you're going to hypnosis now, I would say something like, I wonder what it would feel like for someone who is going in hypnosis. And being indirect, that's how you take those people into hypnosis.
So but the first time you meet somebody, it's like a scoping kind of thing? Like you decide, yeah, hey, do I want to talk to you? And they decide, hey, do I want to talk to you further, essentially?
What do you mean?
Like meaning like that first time you're speaking with somebody that
I guess getting a feel of who they are.
Or like that wants to yeah. think about being a client. Like, because I'm thinking like myself. I'm like, you know, if I was gonna try this out, like how do I know it's the right thing for me? Like
mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually do a consultation call.
Okay.
20 to 30 minutes or whatever they need, you know. And we talk about what their issues are, what they want to work on, what hypnosis is, and uh-huh. and then we go from there. If they feel comfortable with it, then they come in or we Skype. If not, then we don't. And I've never really had anyone that wasn't, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Because I feel like I attract the clients that need my particular form
right.
of help. But the first session, we talk. I teach them about the mind, about some concepts that I know. And then we go into the hypnosis part, which the first time it's about 30 minutes, and after that, each other session is about 15.
Okay.
Yeah, but we always talk before, so I can get a sense of what they want to work on in each session. And usually there's changes after each session.
Interesting.
Well, you get different needs, I suppose.
Yeah.
To be
and they did a study, and I don't remember the correct numbers, but they used somebody who went to hypnotherapy, somebody who went to psychotherapy, and there was another therapy. But the psychotherapy, it took probably 3 years to come to results with a certain issue, and hypnotherapy took 2 or 3 sessions.
Wow.
And the reason for that is because we're getting to the root of the problem. We're not just talking about it. We're actually disconnecting the pathway that you used to take and connecting it to a new one.
Have you explored EMDR?
I haven't really.
What's EMDR?
Yeah, I can't. I don't really know much about it.
It's a form that therapists use sometimes. They've done it on me a few times.
What does EMDR stand for?
I can look it up real quick.
Siri, sure what does called.
EMDR? I do know what it entails, but it's kind of something. It's to help people. I do it for anxiety. Mm-hmm. It's very. I mean, I feel like it's kind of like a hypnosis. That's why I'm asking about it, because it's basically putting you into a mental state that you feel safe in.
It's eye movement, kind of desensitization, and reprocessing.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like, pretty much.
My therapist does like this thing where she makes me tap. I don't know if you've heard of this.
Yeah, tapping.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do tapping with clients too.
And yeah, so stuff like that. But that's not exactly EMDR. EMDR is a little bit different, where you don't necessarily do physical things, but tapping is like a form. It's like a cousin of it.
Yeah. So. With EMDR, what kind of physical things do you do?
Let's see. Guy, well, do you...
I mean...
It has something to do with
your experience.
Movement.
Yeah. Well, a lot of time, like, I used it for when I had really bad anxiety after my dad died. Basically, the therapist kind of talks you into a safe place. Mm-hmm. They make you imagine it. Mm-hmm. All these details about it.
Yeah.
And it's a place that you can just close your eyes and basically come back to. And it basically represses.
Yeah,
so it's a form of it then, you know. And basically, it's something that you can do whenever you're trying to repress a certain anxiety that's just blocking you, I guess. Or however, you can't just do it all the time. I remember they did it when I was in rehab, actually. I didn't do it in rehab. I did it after I came out, but... It's something that you can only do it in small doses.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't do it like once every week.
Yeah.
You have to do it because some people don't react well to it. So, but yeah, I mean, everybody's different, but it's definitely sounds like a form of it.
Yeah. And every session is different. So we might do something similar to that in one session and just.
So now are you a full-time hypnotherapist?
I do hypnotherapy, but I also do Reiki, which is an energy healing.
Oh, that's cool.
A little bit of spiritual coaching now, and also something called channeling.
Mm-hmm.
So channeling is where I'm able to open myself to connect with a higher being that is kind of like a guide. If you've heard of Abraham Hicks.
I have not.
So Abraham is one of the most famous channelers. She's very connected to Louise Hay and all of the self-help type of people, and there was somebody that I met that said I'm a millionaire because of Abraham.
Wow.
It's like teachings that has to do with the universe and alchemy and manifesting.
Oh, interesting.
But I channel an angel, so it's more so an energetic thing, rather than the words that I'm speaking. It's more of like we can connect you with your soul.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So super interesting. You've come a long way.
Yeah.
I have.
You failed up, way up.
I think that's why I wanted Brandon on.
I'm still failing up.
I thought it was a great story from beginning to
flourishing, and that's great.
Yeah.
Huh. You keep flourishing, and you keep just adding on to the good stuff. That's good.
Yeah.
So it's only up from here, is what we're saying.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, Brandon, what we like to do towards the end of the show is, do you have a favorite charity?
I do.
What's your favorite charity?
It's actually Louise Hay's charity. I think it's called the Hay Foundation.
Okay. What does the Hay Foundation do? Do you know?
They pretty much help anyone or any organization that is trying to spread the light and the love out there. And they go into schools and they create schools. It's a very amazing foundation.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
$250 going to the Hayes Foundation in Brandon Koch's name. Brandon, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Thank you so much for
coming. And everybody else, it's BrandonMichaelK.com. Or what's another way to find you?
Brandon11Michael on Instagram, HypnoAngel11 on Twitter, and Brandon Michael Koch on Facebook.
KOCH. Thank you very much, guys. Thanks for listening.